I know, it's recording. It's moving.
Oh, okay, okay.
To pause.
Thank you.
Amanda Fulton from PMG.
Thanks a lot for that. Everyone knows each other. You know exactly who we're dealing with. I am also the author general. Office that you can just start up your report. Thank you.
Thank you, the background, where we come from, legislative requirements,
our strategies, and all these comments, information, all these tools, and all these possible and the role of the entire project. And all of this is just to make you aware of what is going on with regards to government information in the department and the health chief for the department portfolio. Brief background, generally the supreme audit institutions, which are the auditor general throughout the world, they conduct financial audits. We also provide assurance of government information. And why this is necessary, I think we all know that service delivery is very, very important. And we need to account to the public in terms of what we do with the money and if that money is benefiting them accordingly. If we go to three of the presentations, it deals with the difference between performance audit and audit of performance information. Now, this is on a very, very high level because it is critical. It is critical when my colleague will be sharing the progress of the performance information. We need to know the difference between audit of performance information and performance audit. The audit of performance information is part of our yearly regularity audit. So we report on performance information as we report on financial information. It focuses on the non-financial information that is reported in the annual report of a department or an entity. In terms of our criteria, we look at compliance. Has this happened as part of the regularity audit process and the quality of performance information? And it is done by ourselves and the professionals in the audit field. And in terms of performance auditing is an individual audit. And while it is an individual audit, because it focuses on certain areas within an environment of an entity or a department. Unlike the audit of regularity audit, we focus on all aspects within the entity. Performance audit will select the focus area and focus on that. And we focus on specific government policy and management processes, testing the three keys in economy, efficiency, and technology. I think Krishna will go into detail in terms of what that means. The performance audit is done by subject matter. And what we are saying by this is that not everyone can do performance audit. You need to understand the process of performance audit. You need to understand the criteria and requirements of the three keys, and you need to also understand the application. In terms of the legislative requirements, we go to slide number 4. In terms of the Public Audit Act that governs the functions of the Auditor General, we report the person to conclude or have an opinion of the Tribunal of Justice. And this is applicable to all spheres of government, as indicated, national, provincial, provincial, and local government, public entities, and those entities that the Auditor General opts not to perform audit on. Institutions funded by public money, institutions that receive money for public purposes. So we can just zoom in a little bit on those audits or those entities that the Auditor General opts not to perform the audit of. Let me take the easiest example of the state-owned enterprise. In terms of Section 4.3 of the Auditor General, the some of the public entities can opt to, or in terms of the PSMA as well, they can opt to appoint their own auditors in consultation with the Auditor General. in terms of the patent context, the audit of that can opt not to audit some of these entities. We send a folder from something that we audit. And falling into this category, and not necessarily using the PFMA, because they are specifically excluded from the PFMA, the institutions of higher education, that's an example. However, in terms of the capital, as we indicate, that the auditor general must audit all entities that are, or institutions that are funded through public funds, and these institutions then fall into this knowledge. In terms of planning, budgeting and reporting, the requirements in terms of the PFMA trade regulation and the national children guidelines have been issued in terms of planning, budgeting and reporting. The specific guidelines that relate to this is the annual report preparation guide. It stipulates exactly what an entity or a department needs to do or what needs to be in the planning and the reporting, and that the framework even was planning and budgeting and reporting on performance evaluation. On page 5, there is specific reference. On page 5, there is specific reference to the PFMA section that requires performance information to be reported on by the the next slide deals briefly with the performance management process as stipulated through the guidelines in the pillar regulation. And what it does is sort of gives a picture of what ideally needs to happen in the process. As you can see at the top there, that's policy development, which then results in the identification of the desired impact. What it means is that an entity or a department will have a mandate that it needs to achieve, and they will then develop a policy on how they are going to go about in achieving that. And they need to identify what the desired outcome is, what impact do they want to achieve for them to achieve their mandate. They then need to identify the specific outcome or output. And through this, the requirement is that while they identify these outcomes and outputs, they go through a planning and budgeting process. And ideally, for every indicator and target that is set, an entity will have to link it to a budget. So, in achieving a specific indicator or target, there should be an associated budget effect. Which is then set there in setting targets and resource allocation. Which clearly means that every action that needs to go into target achievement needs to be identified so that a resource can be allocated, so that budget can be allocated. The department then goes into implementation of the plan that they have prepared. And certain regulation requires that entities must report on a quarterly basis to national treasury. From the exercise, what we are saying is that to be able to report quarterly to national treasury through oversight committees, the department or entities should have done proper monitoring and evaluation, and ideally on a monthly basis, because the entity or department, they need to identify what they have achieved, what resources they have spent, and have they really achieved what they were set to achieve. They need to be in a position to have supporting documentation to support what they say they have achieved. the problem in most cases is that because this continuous monitoring and evaluation is not happening within the entity, when we go to year end and reporting parameters and 31 May for submission of the financial statements, including performance information, only then do the department and entity go into collecting this information that has not been verified. Now, we are saying if this continuous monitoring and evaluation and reporting takes place, this process has taken place, and what is submitted at the year end would be guaranteed to be complete and accurate. And what's important is that we need to make sure that the internal control within the entity. Previously, we looked at the financial information and we commented on internal control. Now, the entities must realize that the same internal control and discipline implemented for financial information need to be implemented for follow-up information as well. The end year reporting, it talks to what I have just said, that we, the department and entities wait for year end to compile the information, and in most cases it is materially mistaken or documents are not available because they haven't been monitored throughout the year. Page 6 deals with the pillar requirements. This is just reference to section in the pillar regulations that we can refer to and seeing what pillar regulations say in relation to strategic planning, implementation, planning and budgeting, and reporting. It is very, very critical because all the entities must comply with the requirements of the regulation. The next slide deals with the guidelines and frameworks issued by National Treasury in relation to the performance information. This just indicates that there is sufficient guidelines from Treasury side, in our opinion, assisting the department and the entity to compile their specific and corporate plans, to monitor the opportunity and how to report on these. On page 7, it deals with the annual report guidelines, the format and content of reporting on performance information, what we now call predetermined objectives. In terms of the department, national and provincial, they must report under program the following. They must report on each and every performance measure and target specified. And where they are unable to do so, they must state it, and they must state the reasons for major variances between targets and actuals. The first point relating to reporting on every performance measure and target. You will find, not everywhere, but in most entities, where the entities will set their targets, their indicators that are not, for an example, measurable, and therefore makes it difficult for them to indicate whether they have achieved or what have they really achieved. And they then go and change or report on something else because it wasn't set properly right from the beginning. And there is therefore no link between the reported information and what was initially planned. And we do raise this. And again, in terms of the last one, stating the reason for major variances between the target and actual, this is very, very critical, and this goes back to the regular monitoring and evaluation that I spoke about earlier on. In most cases, departments and entities are not able to give us reasons for major variances between what was initially planned and what has been achieved. And mainly it's because of the lack of monitoring and evaluation throughout the year. In that, if I give you an example, if the department sets a to increase the class rate in metric through certain reasons. Say, for example, bring in consultants to train and develop teachers and to assist the learners. And they have not achieved training and development of the teachers for a number of reasons. Perhaps they had budgeted to get a consultant at 100 rand an hour. However, the consultant cost them 200 rand an hour for a number of reasons. And that would be the reason why they did not achieve. What they achieved at a certain cost should link to what they had achieved and what that cost. And we can only be able to do that if this 3-year long-term evaluation takes place. Because if you haven't been doing it, at the end of the year, they tend to some stuff, the reason why they have not achieved. Which clearly means that there hasn't been proper accountability in terms of spending the money. And similarly, if they have achieved less than what they intended to, and at the same time, the rate of the consultant was less than what they should have, we should be able to see a saving. But in most cases, you will find that they have used the whole budget, but they have not achieved, and are not able to explain that. And what we're saying is, if they achieve less, and the cost per unit was less, there should be a savings. And if there isn't a savings, they should then explain what happened to the savings. And if there has been a movement, that should be indicated. So there should be a proper follow through in terms of what happened to the funds linking to that savings. Going a bit ahead of myself, I think it's because we're quite passionate about this. The next slide just illustrates the format in terms of the general guidelines in which the department must support, and that's the reason for major variation. Page 8 indicates the format for the public committee. And the next slide indicates the framework for managing program performance information, which is applicable to all entities, national, provincial, and local spheres of government. And there's a website that indicates where the guidance is available. And the guidance talks about a number of topics there that we have alluded to, and specifically the roles and responsibilities of each. Page 9, just an outline of the ADSA strategy on performance information. As the committee members should know, the ADSA started with the audit for performance information around 2005-06. It was a safety approach with the intention to make sure that the public sector is ready to report on performance information. What we're saying here is that we've traveled a long way to where we are. We are still not expressing opinion on performance information in the audit report. However, we are indicating what the opinion would have been if we had expressed an opinion in the audit report. That opinion is indicated in the management report of the entity. We are moving towards expressing an opinion on performance information or predetermined objectives. And data on the script level will be feedback on the readiness of it in terms of where public sector is on performance information, whether we are at the stage where we can say we can express an opinion in the audit report. Slide 18 is just an indication of, it's just a summary of where we are in terms of performance information.
for 2010. I did not include 2011 because the outcomes have not been tapered yet. So we will report that when we report on the outcomes for 2011. The areas of non-compliance for the department in 2010 is still at 56%, and for public entities, 22%. Performance information evidence not being useful, 53% performance and 28%. Evidence for performance information not being reliable, partners 39% and public entities 17%. Performance information not submitted at all, department 3% and public entities 2%. If you go to page 10 in terms of our audit approach, this is quite similar to the process that we follow through when we audit financial information. In that, we expect entities to have internal policies, procedures, and controls in place. And we then evaluate these because it is quite critical that entities have proper systems of internal control. We relate systems of internal control to three aspects, being leadership within the organization, financial and performance management, and governance. What is leadership? In terms of the, if you look at the outcome of every entity, these are mainly driven by the leadership. This is mainly driven by the tone that leadership has. And we are saying if the leadership is strong, if the leadership performs their oversight responsibilities, if the leadership creates a conducive environment for employees to function in, if the leadership is honest and trustworthy, that will serve customers within the whole organization. Financial and performance information, this relates to, for an example, the reconciliations that are done on a regular basis, the monitoring and evaluation, availability of supporting appropriate supporting evidence, availability of key management, recruitment and performance management systems that are in place. And if you look at governance structure, it talks to the strategy, the fraud prevention plan, functioning effectiveness of the audit committee and internal audit. And what comes through all of this is the IT processes. Because IT processes will be at your leadership, whether leadership is taking initiatives to ensure that the proper IT system, financial and performance management, do we have an IT system that supports the information that comes out, and at governance level as well, does the risk strategy talk to the IT system? Once we have made sure that going back to my slide now, once we have established the internal policies and procedures and controls that are in place, we obviously need to test whether the systems that the organization says are in place are functioning the way they are functioning. And then we can determine whether we can place reliance on the controls that are in place, that they are functioning the way they are functioning, and if we take reliance, then in terms of substantiating the numbers that are reported on, what level of assurance do we get from the internal control, so that then we can determine the level of assurance that we need from the procedures that we are going to carry out to determine the accuracy of the numbers that have been reported. And in our audit process and the execution, we will have the consistency and the presentation in the annual report. We will test the information for relevant source documents, and that the documents, the supporting evidence are valid, accurate, and complete, and that the information that is reported is valid, accurate, and complete as well. On page 11, it talks about the audit criteria. If you look at compliance with reporting requirements, as I have indicated, there are several regulations which indicate what must be reported, and that is what we will verify. Whether the information that has been reported does exist, was within the timeline, and it is presented the way that the regulations say it should be presented. In terms of usefulness, we look at the ability of the indicator, whether it is measurable, whether it is. Whether it is relevant to the entity. If I can just give an example there. There are entities that will have indicators that are not relevant to them, that are not applicable to them. And that's where the relevance comes. I mean, if you look at their mandate, if you look at what they do, the indicator was not properly thought through, and it is therefore not relevant to them. And consistency of information and evidence that has been supported. And then we look at reliability of information and supporting evidence, whether it's valid, whether it's accurate, and whether it is complete. If we look at the performance information framework, we look at all relevant laws and regulations, we look at frameworks in national treasury, and we look at all other frameworks, secular, that have been issued in the nation. And this I have indicated earlier. In terms of submission of performance information, performance information must be submitted with the financial statements to the Auditor General for audit on the 31st of May. Audit reporting. We normally do interim audits where practical, so that we can then give management opportunity to correct and implement control where appropriate. And then we also do a final audit because we need to cover the whole year when we do the audit and we report accordingly. And we report on all material shortcomings that have been identified in the audit report, and as indicated, we did an indication of management report what the opinion should have been. If we go to page 13, in terms of the audit report, so for the 2011 financial year, as I indicated, the opinion is still on the audit report. And in terms of years beyond, we are currently busy with the readiness assessment, which will determine the one we will be expressing an opinion. On the audit report. And in terms of the format in the audit report, we will follow a similar format that we are following in relation to the financial reporting, indicating whether the audit opinion is an adverse, a disclaimer, qualified opinion, emphasis of matter or other matter. what do you mean by this? Affect in terms of the claim of opinion, the claim of opinion that when the relationship scope limitations were supporting the presentation was not submitted. The adverse opinion relates to the settlement of management, where, for an example, they have reported information that we do not agree with or we could not verify. And a qualified opinion would indicate an area where we are not happy with. But if I go back to the two, the adverse and the claim of opinion, the impact of the statement must be of such a nature that it renders the whole performance information report not worth the paper it costs, which means that it materially impacts on most of the performance information that we have reported. Or it's so material, it's so significant that the whole performance information reported is not worth the paper it costs. And with a qualified opinion, we then ring-fence a component and say that except for this component, the rest of the reported information fails to them, so we dissolve the evidence of matter is normally not a qualification or a modified opinion. It actually is not normally. It's just an area where we're drawing attention to the user of something that has been disclosed already in the annual report of the organization. If we go to the audit report example, in terms of the typical findings that we get when we do the audit of the internal objectives, they range from level of reporting on all the objectives. I've indicated that in some cases the entity will not have done anything or would not have put steps in place or actions in place to make sure they achieve something, they've done something else, and then they don't report on what they have planned, but they report on something else. And it relates to the second one, reporting on objectives indicators in addition to those that are approved strategic or annual performance plan. Reserve for variances not included or not auditable. As I've indicated, we need to be able to audit these results. It doesn't help that they have the reasons and we cannot audit them, we cannot verify them. Because the intention is that we give members of the public more information on why we are not able to achieve. The logical links between objectives, indicators and targets do not exist. We have seen in some instances where objectives are set but they do not talk to the target. Objectives, indicators and targets are not consistent. Changes to plan objectives that are not disclosed. I have indicated earlier that if the indicators are, for example, not measurable, they can be changed. However, the same process that is set out to approve the initial objective must be followed. And this must be disclosed because if, for example, the department changes their indicators now in September and let's assume that it's gone through the approval process, they would have been expected to have reported on the initial one for the 6 months, and they must disclose what they have achieved in there and then indicate that they were changed subsequently and these are the new targets and this is what they then have achieved. And the above can lead to adverse or the same of opinion that I have said, because we can see that they are transversal, they would apply to all of these performance indicators that the department has set. Example of qualified audit opinion, this is where we then can ring fence and this portion of the report has information, except for this portion, the report has reported information is very presented. Lack of effective and efficient transparent system, which results in what is evident, inappropriate what is evident in supplements, or insufficient what is evident was provided for audit. Information supported not valid, accurate, or complete, that will relate to a specific focus area. I have to follow through from reports submitted too late to conduct audit work. And again, depending on the extent, and this can also lead to the same of opinion because it's mostly lack of documentation and lack of documentation results in a full communication which means that also very limited in the alcohol and that can result in a disclaimer of opinion. In terms of the role of internal auditor, we expect that, let me just take a step back. In terms of the pillar regulation, internal audit is meant to assist management to test whether the controls in place are effective and are functioning as they need to do. Internal audit is the eyes and ears of management. Internal audit is expected to go before the external audit in the AGSA and to advise management where they can improve before the external audit comes in. So similarly, this is what we expect from internal audit. To go and establish whether proper controls were set by management and whether these controls are functioning the way they should be. And again, if I can just re-emphasize, the internal controls, they relate to the three areas in leadership, financial management, and the government. And as we have said earlier, if these three are functional, there is no reason why an entity should then have the kind of findings that we have alluded to, because then all these three areas will be functional the way they should. And we believe that if entities have internal control functioning at this level, these three levels accordingly, then we are certainly on our way to clean administration. And I believe that, as is expected from government side, clean administration means that you will have a clean opinion and no other findings, which means there is no reason for us to be concerned now or in the future. And with that, thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Chair Clare, and we'll start with the performance. And I think in the once you complete the first part question, what do you want to question now on this report? Because that's sort of the performance report, signed and sealed. You might start that. Have you got anything in writing?
No.
Have you got anything in writing? Because I'm prepared to do
it. I don't see what I. What I will do is offer the presentation. I will make the presentation available to the book cover committee for further scrutinization. And should there be any additional questions, they are more than welcome to direct them to me.
Thank you. I think that also means that we have to listen. And just make some notes for this performance or what we're going to speak to. Make notes. We would like to ask questions because I think that's something very important. I'm going to close up.
Well, maybe for you to hear from
you. You're going to have to make me laugh. And I think we need whatever you're going to give us, just after the meeting, so that people can look at it, because I think that's important. And as you heard, the committee is auditing the audit general.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for allowing me the opportunity to come and give you some feedback in respect of performance audit. I think maybe just a little bit dragging from performance audit point, because you heard that our office is 100 years old this year. And it's quite an achievement for us. And within performance audit, this performance audit has been conducted in 1975. So we're coming now from 25 years in providing performance audit services to governments in South Africa. Within the ATSA, there's two different lines of audit. So one is the regularity audit, where you will find the mandatory auditors being the regularity auditors. On the other side, we're talking about specialized services. Within specialized services, we have our investigations unit and our performance audit unit. And I'm here today representing the performance audit unit. I'm going to quickly give you an overview of what performance audit is all about, and then secondly, just give you quick feedback on where we are with current performance audits and what do we see in the future going forward for performance audits. In respect of the overview for performance audits, like Maisie already indicated, the difference between performance audit and predetermined objectives is lying in whether it's mandatory and discretionary audit and who performs the audit. So within the regularity audit, specifically if we're talking on predetermined objectives, you will find that the mandatory audit is being done annually and the opinion is expressed, although at this stage it's in the management report, and it is covering your normal audit decisions. So then we're talking about the validity, completeness, and accuracy of information disclosed and all the rest on the detail that might be already covered. Within performance audit, we are a discretionary audit service to the discretion of the AGSA. We are making use of performance auditors as well as subject matter experts when we perform our performance audit. We're also not limited to annual information, so we can cover the past 2, 3, 5 years of information when we audit. We call our audits the cradle to the grave audit. So it's important that when that first thought was given to something, that we test it from there up until the end when we implement or when we give over or whatever the end product will be. In respect of performance audit, we focus on the 3 E's, economy, efficiency and effectiveness. We also cover compliance and our public reporting and our reporting depends on what type of audit we are conducting at that specific stage. If we talk a little bit quickly about performance audit is measuring or is independently evaluating the measures instituted by management to ensure that the resources are procured economically and used efficiently and effectively. And if we break down the specific words, you will see that the economy just means the procurement of services, the right quality, quantity, time, place at the lowest cost. If we're talking about the efficiency side, it's the relationship between your input and output. You will either maximize your output with a standard input, or you have a standard output and you're going to minimize your input to get to that output. In terms of effectiveness, that is where we specifically have a look at government objectives or your entity's objectives, your social responsibilities going forward. So at the end of the day, our primary objective is simply to determine whether those management measures exist and whether they are effective. It also provides us with a tool for communication to management as well as to other stakeholders. And a nice change from the normal negative audit side is going forward that we're also going to look at good practices. To just put it firstly into perspective, and secondly, when we are doing transversal audits, it's quite a good thing to share amongst different entities or departments to enable everybody to use something good that somebody else is already using at that stage. And then obviously to explain the effects thereof. In terms of the process that we are following when we are when we are doing performance audits, it's quite a lengthy process that we follow. The first thing that we do is we analyze government documents to determine what is government's priority and the objectives. From there, we go into interaction with both external and internal stakeholders, where certain themes are then identified for further research. After the research has been done, that will be submitted to the Performance Audit Advisory Committee, we call it the PAIC, which is headed by Auditor General himself. So it's quite a profile committee, where they then evaluate all the information provided to them in determining what will be the specific themes that we are going to audit going forward for the next year, 2 years. We got three different types of audits. The one is the entity specific audit, that's where we focus only on one theme at one specific entity. And then the second type, and that is the one that we are mostly focusing on at the moment, is transversal performance audits, where we do performance audits focusing on the same initiative across government, whether it's on different tiers of government or between departments, national and provincial. From there, once that's been approved, we go into the normal development stage, where the audit will take on the detailed planning, and we will go on to the execution, report back at the audit, and then the follow-up that will come from there. That's very, very important. And at that stage, we will hand over to our regularity auditors, where what they will do in the next audit cycle, come and follow up on those commitments made by management to see whether those commitments are taking place. In terms of the current transversal performance audit that affects specifically basic education environment, the first one is infrastructure delivery process. The second one is in respect of ECD Grade R and study pudding. And then the third one is the readiness of government to report on its performance. And that is now where a link is coming from, where Mikey just explained to you in terms of predetermined objectives. And we will quickly speak about that a little bit more in detail. In terms of the infrastructure delivery process, the status of the audit currently is all audits have been completed at the provincial department. We identified two sectors, one being health and one being education, where the audits have been performed. Management reports have been issued, we received comments back, except at this stage for education in Eastern State. Thereafter, a management report has been compiled and submitted to the National Department of Basic Education, where quite a positive response was received from specifically the Department of Basic Education. So that transversal audit report will be published as soon as we have all our briefings with the MECs and the different ministers done. Different ministers, just meaning health education, and then on public works, being the implementing agents, will also meet with that specific MEC and the minister. I can just say that we've got a meeting with a basic education minister for coming Friday the 2nd. Then, in terms of ECD and curriculum, that specific audit started in 2010. The focus of the audit was on policies, awareness, human capital, infrastructure and the environment, learner teacher support material, and implementation, monitoring and evaluation of systems and processes. The different role players involved, we are auditing that at National Department of Basic Education as well as all non-provincial departments of education. Very important at the end of the day to get a sectoral perspective on how ECD Grade R and Curriculum is functioning. What is our intended end product on that? We are going to issue management reports to the different departments by the 31st of October 2011. The management report to National Department of Basic Education will be submitted by the 31st of January 2012, and then the public audit report will be issued within 2 months of receiving acceptable comments from the different departments or by the latest June 2012. The current status, we are finalizing our execution phase at the moment in respect of that audit. terms of readiness, that is now to determine whether government is ready to report on its performance information or predetermined objectives, as you know it. And that is now exactly what Michael spoke about a little bit earlier. If you haven't looked at the statistics for 19, and I do apologize, unfortunately 10-11 isn't available yet, so we can't have a look at those. But if you have a look at statistics 19, you will see that the national PFMI audit outcome, the number of entities with findings or predetermined objectives increased on national departments, although the number of audits done remained the same. And if they go over to provincial departments, you will see that also there the predetermined objectives increased and the number of entities audited decreased. So it tells us that something is wrong within government in why they can't report accurately, valid and completely on the predetermined objectives. And that is why the AGFA requested this specific audit, that we can have a look at the systemic issues within government on why they are not ready to report. Our audit will focus on guidance and assistance, and then also on systems and processes. In terms of the role players that we're going to cover, we're going to cover the whole spectrum. So we're going to cover the guiding departments, the implementation departments, the evaluation departments, training departments, and monitoring departments. So what does that mean? We are going to cover departments, national treasury, the presidency, provincial treasury, the premier's offices, and then within that, to get sectoral perspective, four sectors have been identified for audit as well. And those four sectors is health, education, social development, and public works. So for those specific four departments, we're also going to audit the national department, being responsible for concurrent functions on planning, monitoring, and evaluation functions in terms of their provincial departments. And then on the provincial level, we will audit those as reporting institutions on the implementation with the predetermined objectives. Currently, we are in the completion of execution phase with this specific audit, and our intended end product simply will be a chapter in the AGFA general report, and that will come out anything from September to December 2011. From there, management reports will be issued to all auditees. A public audit report will be issued within 2 months of receiving comments. And then the very nice thing that is exciting all of us about this audit is the good practice guide, where we want to share with all the departments what they can do in getting it right when they report on their readiness. In terms of future performance audit, currently education on basic education, the National School Nutrition Program has been identified. We also did some research in terms of no-fee school, but with the structure changing, we have to go back and just update our research to determine whether it's still feasible to go on with that audit, and then any other initiatives as we will find during our stakeholder interaction, both internally and externally. In terms of the future of performance audit itself, my representative gave you a quick feedback on it. We are going forward in aligning our performance audit to government self-outcome, because that is the objective and the priority set by government. As you know, that outcome one is focusing on education. And stemming from that, we will identify specific personnel that will become acquainted with everything in specific sectors so that they can become specialists to be on top of the latest developments, priorities, and the risks in respect of those specific sectors. Further on, we're also going to focus on improved integration between performance audit and regularity audit to make sure that to make sure that as one audio team, we give out one message. We can also transfer, share our knowledge with our regulatory auditors. They can share their knowledge with us, and to make sure that we provide you as a client an improved product, focusing on your priorities and to stay relevant. Thank you.
Thank you a lot for that report, ma'am. I think the report given was very comprehensive. And just to start now, we'll start now with understanding of the work that was the general is doing and what we should look for when we do our report. Whether it's a quarter report, or whether it's our annual report, or whether it's, you know, the beginning of the year, policy report and budget. Thank you. Question? Any questions? We've got Jackie there, at Angelina, Mishwana, then at Angel Kotana, and at Kobo, Mani, Angel Mani, James, and then Mishishi, and then at Angel Smiles last time too. And in that order, since one person is completed, you start the question. Thank you.
It's just a commentary. I will come up with a presentation on the way the presentation is being made now, which was full change, the statement audit, which was quite good here, so it's like a really, just to be some time to be faced with such a lot of the situation that you're in now. But as I even understand, yeah, so the person that had the book will be able to get very good. It's quite discussed with the super issues of the person, so whether it was something that you can carry on. And again, I think, yeah, it's one of the things we already say, they knew that they were coming to do the presentation to us. So really, for now, that is one of the things they should do to the person that is quite frustrating. I thought, yes, one part of that is a really, it was quite there for the second, but we hope next time we don't have to get to
I'll commend them. Thanks a lot for the comment, and I think you take it to heart. Because the thing is that people need to interrogate your report, and it's very difficult when they don't have the report in front of them. Thank you. And remember, like, you expect excellent come out of the class. We expect education coming with that. And we start the question from there.
Yeah, thank you, Professor. Yeah, on the first report, actually, I want to thank you for the document in front of us. But I've been trying to follow it. When I was young, and since that, if I followed for a few minutes and there is that thing, it's like I'm not getting it right. So I was following this report. Because I was trying to check how this audit will enhance our quality education at the end of the day. Because it's like whatever we do, it needs to unpack. As you listen to the objectives and whatever, you need to see that this definitely will lead to the improvement of quality education. But I failed to do it. Maybe I was not fit to be this particular class, but I was disappointed. I was very much disappointed. But then when I thought, I tried to create a question around was this issue of funds plus achievement plus proper budgeting. You put those things together and think it's correct. But if you do that all the time, putting a priority as quality, because I think I missed that. Like, that's what I know what to talk about. As long as whatever you are going to assess, whatever you are going to evaluate, will end up getting all the errors pointing at quality education unity. it would have been better that I tried to see that. And maybe that's why I'm failing philosophy year after year. Maybe because I don't even see the end. On the second one, I was more than disappointed. I thought maybe it was already mentioned that how you come here and you report. We do not have a report. Usually, this committee sends people like that back. And I was checking if there are calculations that we don't know between the WIPAD and the chairperson. Because I was so surprised that you are reporting and people are not saying anything without a basis. But what I think I got from whatever you were saying around objective, you mentioned the issue of CPC and candidacy, because I think you definitely improve the standard of life in general in South Africa. People in South Africa were not able to go and sign at the day, you know, just to sign or even to go and vote. Such that when you talk of CPD for these people who are the caribou, yeah, I thought maybe I need to listen without this particular thing, without the document that I. But then, can we ensure that there's some. Is it effective, whatever you're doing? How effective? Because we can't, like you said, from 1975, anything I caught you saying. From 1975. Did you say 20 something yet? Because I know for the fact that it should be 22. Yeah, because you said 1975, and you said 20 something in the high corner. What school did I go to? Because we want to talk of 25, I get it 22 on the spot. And I was saying, if this was done ever since all these years, where are we? Yeah, I thought.
Okay,
thank you very much. Yeah, Dr. Chesterton, I just that is the last present. Very Chesterton. In order one to be effective, must get relevant information. You can't just sit here and listen to one person to tell us without talking about the information. You think this must be correct. Just emphasize on what the speaker said. It must be correct. Secondly, in the very same report, he spoke about the positive response on the infrastructure of basic education. I don't know how positive it is because we don't have the document. Is it positive on the issue of transmission or positive on the expenditure? Can I be clarified on that chapter? On the first presenter, I just want to know, Chesterton, to reflect about the institutions who do not comply with the 2 days of submission. What does the Auditor General do on that score? And is there any means of reminding institutions for submission, or they just rely on the 2 days, which is set as a standard of reporting? And secondly, is there any mechanism of monitoring the expenditure of the institution except the submission date? Is there anything really in between before the submission date which is taking place? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. You see, the issue of our oversight rule is very important. It's something that we take very seriously. And we always welcome help to make our work more effective. I'm just trying to welcome the idea of a performance audit. Because looking at, for example, we use the example of CITA, where they do their report and they were graded as it were. And our complaint was that it's almost like a compliance. It's a yes and no kind of thing. Have they done this? Yes. Have they done that? No. And then at the end, we are able to give some kind of opinion. And they score a 5 out of 5 or a 4.5 out of 5, some of them even 1. That's based on, you know, regulated rules. Are they compliant? And we have always been saying it's possible for an organization or an entity to score 5 out of 5 while there is no impact on the ground. I'm talking about service delivery now. Because as when it comes to an ordinary person, I'm including myself, or a taxpayer, if the outcome should be quality teaching, it should be quality learning. Quality education must be the outcome. So we would then look at the OIT's report on the Department of Education. You know, there is an emphasis of matter there, they have not complied with this, they have not complied with that. Or maybe they get a clean audit. It will tell us very little about what is happening in a classroom. It just says that, you know, they are assisting and, you know, they are complying. If they are supposed to do this, they are doing it. So the issue of personal audit for me is very important. And then it leads me to my first question. I hear that for now, it's not yet mandated. You have done it. It is not in the report. It's not in your audit report. It is in a letter to management. Now, let's say you have done that with basic education. You have audited their performance, but you have written it in, you know, letter to the minister. Why are we waiting for the time that is going to be mandated? Is it possible for this committee chairperson to have access to that kind of information? How classified, maybe covered by the protection of information bill, I don't know. How classified is this information? Mm-hmm. Because it would really help us. Not because we want to cut the minister's head down to it, but simply because we want to understand how we are going, how the system is maturing. Mm-hmm. How accessible is that information? The other thing relates to what was said by Ms. Ngau. I'm talking about here achievement of target. Talking about measurability of target. I'm trying to check, do these entities at the beginning of the year submit their targets to the Auditor General? Or the Auditor General interacts with the target at the time of audit. At which time the Auditor General may just say, you know, your targets are not measurable. But for me, if they are submitted, if we can tell them that and say, go and change your target. They are not measurable, they can't be quantified, therefore they can't be assessed. Go and change them now. I want to know when does this thing happen. But secondly, something that really scares me. What was said by Ms. Ngau, procedures that must be followed when you change target. And I'm saying, Jesus Christ. In other words, as a manager, I can have my target. Somewhere midstream, when I see that I'm not going to achieve them, I sit down and change them. It scares me that there could even be a procedure. That there could even be a procedure to change target. Maybe a bit more information. But also, Chairperson, in one of the committees, higher education, there are times when we have sent people back and said, no, your targets are too low. Your targets are too low. You know, I can give myself very low targets and then I double them, achievement 200%. And the targets are low. So I want to understand the role of the AG here. Can the AG say to a department, these targets are wrong? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. as a person who is not acquainted with what it does, I will leave my common, my main industry and accent and language. Firstly, how many times is the AG conducting audits in the department? If the audit is done once a year, for instance, is it not so certain that it will be done at a particular point in time every year? like when I was at primary school, we were normally told that the departmental visiting teacher will be here in 2 weeks' time. And therefore we had time to clean the school. At least a week, the whole week, we had the whole week to clean the school. When the departmental visiting teacher arrived, he found the school very, very clean. Is that not the situation with auditing in our country? Number two. If you give an unqualified audit, for instance, should our understanding be that the entity is performing at the required minimum, or are they performing above average? My last question relates to the slide in page 9. I don't know whether my understanding is correct here. On non-compliance, you have A22 and A56. Let us hope that real non-compliance is what we don't see. Is it 56% in that department and 22% in public entities? Not useful information. Is it 52% in department and 28% in public entities? My understanding is that 53% of the information that the Auditor General is getting is not useful. Is that correct? If that then that is correct, are we having a failing state, or are we going to be fair and counted among nations that are counted properly at the end of the day? Yes.
Thank you very much. I had a question relating to slide 3 on page 7, the second slide, dealing with the annual report guidance. And the sub-program that I'm concerned with is the workbook program, the workbook publishing program. And there's a major variance that is as yet unexplained. And let me tell you what it is. The budget for the workbook was 750,216,000 rand. 72,414,000 rand was spent on printing. The printing was done by a partnership, Nabovo Printing, which as part of the note is very little printing. But that's the
point. You're not speaking to Tibetan.
I know, but I'm raising this as an example, Jack.
Mm. I'm not speaking to the report that's not answered.
No, I'm not. If you allow me to finish my question. But the printing and distribution was 72 million. And then the in-house design of the workbook cost 94 million, leaving an unspent amount of 583 million rand. A lot of money. And so, what I am asking is whether you, in fact, this is a major unexplained variance in the budgeting exercise. And my question is, do you audit that process? Have you audited that process? Do you intend to audit that process? And once you do that, whom do you report to in terms of explaining how a project of that kind was so badly calibrated?
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you,
Joker. I also have two things which tells us our decision about that we have to set back. Who promised that?
I think you should be fined, and the fine should pay your holiday account.
Thank you, Chairperson. Even though Honorable due to some of my question on slide, so on page 7, and then the presenter gave an example of a department and entities failing to give reasons. I just want to share whose responsibility is it to assist those departments of the entity. And the second question
Can we get the report on province and also the name of those entities? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start, Chairperson, to just to thank the presentations, both of them. And then the question is with regard to the current audit. I would like to appreciate the audit on basic education. And then ask the question, are you going to do a in future an audit on labor, the Department of Labor? Because education and employment are the issues, I would imagine, for our future, for our youth. So I think it's important to have that kind of audit. Then secondly, let me then come to our dear province in the Eastern Cape. You have said that there is a report on Eastern Cape going to DBE. Now, I just want to know, in that report, from your side especially, was AG, do you assist it with regard to a management plan? Have you checked whether there is a management plan in that report, so to assist the intervention of TV? Thank you.
My first question would be, you make mention of some indication if it's specific to education, how those areas compare with the previous year, the previous 5 years. So then my question on the Eastern Cape, I think, will be covered down the study.
Thanks, Uncle Patty. Uncle Phoenix.
So there was a mention of the internal audit, of which you have to agree they are quite good. But my question would be, on the whole Department of Basic Education, when you come up with the audit for basic education, for the department as a whole, I think there is a great challenge of which I don't know how to go about auditing it. The money that goes out to schools, yes, the way auditing is done. I wish to be clear about the reason when you go to that level, the way audit is being done as to how does it fit to the provincial audit, and as to say, are we getting the true reflection, the report that you gave at this level, do they talk to the thing that is happening down there? How do we make sure that today that relationship? Maybe I must say, I'm from there. The way auditing is being done, when you go down to school, really, you must fit it to that. And I wonder to say, when you come back with these reports, is this a true reflection of what is happening down to the schools and the audits that have been done at the level of the school, where the money actually goes most of it for the implementation? Secondly, mine, I think one of the things touched on it, as to say, yes, we can talk of the variance, but we talk of the variance that seems to be good to whatever entity or the department. I'm also going to make the example of the report. When it was planned and budgeted for, only to find that there was this huge failing. As the auditors, do you pet them, do you pet the department and say, well done, because we have failed?
Is it not a sign of it's a bit because I'm making the example with the men of education. Or it can be the example of writing some, it can be whatever example, but yeah, it's the one that I think all of us is. If ever such things happen in men or in other entities, other departments are really, I would say that's a good sign to say the department is failing, the entity is failing, or can we take that as a sign of poor planning? Let me end there in the email on that question. The second presenter, I forgot in but to talk of this process that you follow, of the specific audit, where you have to follow the normal development stage, is there, and how long does it take for the whole process to be done? How long does it take you to finish the whole process of auditing? And even the feedback, even when there are something wrong, we have to go to the entity. That process, how long does it take so that we can see how do we easily get to the pool that is ever there are problems that are being identified. Last question, again, the example of the Eastern Cape. I wish to get clearly from the auditors to say, maybe the process that I'm asking is leading to that. How long will it take for the auditor to get the indication that something is wrong down? Because I believe the crisis that you're having from the indication is not something that started last year or this year. I believe those are there are some of the things from your report that you should have. That should have given the directionist to think that something is going on. What is the if so, if ever there are directions, if ever there are things that you have highlighted before, what is it? And where do you report, you know, so that you can end up saying, we can be sure of where the problem is, which will be the report that you get so that even the department can fold our hands and say, even the portfolio committees can fold our hands and say, yeah, everything is going well because the reports are well and close. So, I'm really interested to say, really, do you think the reports that you get from you, other reports that you can rely on and say something is happening in whatever department that you're working with?
Thanks a lot for that. I think the ATF will often have to answer the question, somewhat interrelated. And then, you know, generally, I think that what is one has to do is, if there is a performance audit, why do you still have to live with something? You know, because if you do a performance audit, that is to see whether the delivery is taking place, that in fact we were speaking about before. Because we still are having like protests, etc. Now just speak to everything, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable Chair, through you, please allow me to sincerely apologize for not having documentation for the presentation relating to some of the information. I take full responsibility for that. There was miscommunication on our part. The plan was actually not to do the presentation, but because the colleague was here, we thought we should use the opportunity to just update the portfolio committee on the issues of personal information. Definitely want to make sure that the document is available, and this will certainly not happen again in the future. The one thing that I just want to make a comment on before I go into the details of the question is an overarching responsibility of the auditor general in terms of reporting. Be it on financial matters or performance matters, and whether through the process of audit of predetermined objectives or performance audit.
we respond based on the information that has been presented to us. So we express an opinion, or we report on factual findings based on information that has been submitted to us. Information that is submitted to us will come in the form of a report, and then supporting evidence to support the report that has been presented to us. And we have formed our audit for treatment of that financial information on a sample basis. One thing, the organization has gone through a number of transactions. We come in, we select a sample from the whole population, and we test a number of assertions. That is, validity, as we've indicated, completeness, existence, and other things. And if we find problems in the sample, then we say that this means that the same amount of misstatements that we have identified, or deviations in internal control that we have identified, exist in the whole population. Now, it does happen that we select a sample, and in that sample, we do not find any error. And based on that, and this is indicated in our audit report, and in that case, we then assume that because we haven't found any error in this sample, we assume the whole population is, so to speak, clean. Again, we might find a number of misstatements in our sample, and these misstatements are below our materiality level, which means in terms of the error amount that we can tolerate as auditors. And we determine this to establish the risk of us expressing an inappropriate opinion. So the errors that we found in this sample are within the tolerable error rate that we have set. And therefore we say that these errors do not necessarily render the whole population misstated, or we can tolerate the level of error in the population, and we therefore will not qualify the claim or issue another opinion. However, in the management report, these findings will be. And there was a question in terms of accessibility of the management report. Yes, we do issue to an accounting officer, and I believe that the portfolio committee can request management to submit the management report to the portfolio committee. And having said that, I will then just go into the detail and try to explain the questions. If you allow us, I think the questions are intertwined, so between me and Chris, now we just change positions in terms of responding to the questions. There was a question that I think being posed to performance audits and also audit predetermined objectives that talks about the quality of education, how our audits enhance the quality of education. And in terms of the enhancement of the quality of education, if we talk about financial audits, we merely concentrate on the numbers in the financial statement. And whether they meet certain criteria. And when we talk about predetermined objectives, the quality of education must be set in the predetermined objectives of an entity. For instance, in terms of the mandate of the basic education, I believe the minister will make some commitments in the budget speech. The department will then go and translate those commitments into the staff plan, into the objectives, indicators, and targets. And all of these things that are of major concern should form part of the threat plan of the department. And linked to that, the question was also asked whether we do get involved in the development of the strategic plan of the department, and I'll respond to that. Ideally, part of the in-year monitoring that is performed at any level
involved in validation of this draft plan before it's finally approved, and in terms of whether the objective set will enable the department to achieve its mandate and to achieve those things that matter to our community and to Parliament as well. And what we then audit is whether the objectives that have been set by the department and approved have been achieved, and whether they are measurable in terms of they are simple, they are measurable, they are time-bound, for instance, you know, they should be achieved within a certain time period. And we therefore will not look at something that is not within the threat plan of the entity. We look at what is within in the threat plan of the entity. And my colleague has mentioned earlier that we are going to look into the 12 government goals. We are going to look into the contract of the ministers, whether those objectives and the areas in the minister's contract have been incorporated in the threat plan of the department, and whether the department is then performing according to that. In terms of our involvement in the development of the threat plan, we unfortunately cannot be involved for the mere reason that we need to be aware of our independent threat. If we get involved in the development of the threat plan of the department, in a way we are, when we come into audit, we will then be auditing the work that we perform. We'll be doing a self-review, a self-audit. And in terms of our auditing standards, that is not allowed. We believe that the department, we giving them sufficient guidelines through the audit on a yearly basis, we give them recommendations. We go to the extent of requesting them to develop action plans and monitoring them through the audit committee to make sure that it is achieved. And we believe that we're doing sufficient, we're giving them sufficient recommendations to influence them to go in the right direction in terms of developing the objectives, monitoring them, implementing them, and so forth and so forth. There was also a question that we've been in the business of performance audits for a long time, and how effective are we? I think we can comment on that.
Thank you, Honourable I think if I need to take back certain of our performance audit reports that have been published during the past 5 to 10 years, and the one that I like to normally talk about is the one on abandoned mines and the impact that it had at the end of the day by government realizing how long it is going to take, and excuse me, but I can't recall the thousands of years that it's going to take if they provide that specific amount of money to rehabilitate the specific mines. I really do think that we are making a difference. If I have a look back at infrastructure now, specifically infrastructure delivery process that we audited, that was the first transversal audit that we conducted within the AG. And by focusing on the specific things, the important things, supply chain management, then needs determination, the provision at the end of the day of a product that could be immediately used to perform service delivery, it really had a huge impact. I can, for instance, report on specific orders that are there on infrastructure, where some of those specific infrastructure projects didn't come off the ground, and after the audit, the department really went in and they completed the project and put them into use. So I really think though you can see that type of commitment from the department in grabbing what we are saying there, in going forward, trying and to resolve their problems, and also to get their financial management in order.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question on sort of the kind of support that we give to organizations if and what do we do if they do not comply and remind us of submission and monitor of expenditure before submission. Madam Chair, we have mentioned that we perform interim audits we perform interim audits, being audits in the middle of the year. And then we perform final audits, which is when we then audit to issue final audit reports that get tabled in the annual report. Which means that we are constantly visible at our entity. And in terms of the non-compliance, if entities do not comply, our audit reports are structured in such a way that previously we have the financial report where we issue an opinion on the financial matter, and then we have an emphasis on better paragraph, and now we have the other responsibilities in terms of regulations being a report on predetermined objectives and complying on rules and regulations. So we specifically indicate where the department did not comply. So that is reported. And again, I must emphasize that I believe that we support our entities a great deal in terms of directing them on what to focus on in correcting any findings. And I'm saying any findings, because when we issue findings, we categorize them again in three categories, being findings that have an impact on the audit report, findings that are significant, and those that we call housekeeping findings. And we do emphasize that even though findings are significant and not reported in the audit report, if not attended to, they might result in a modified audit opinion, a qualification disclaimer, or an adverse opinion. And we support them, they develop the action plan, and these action plans are taken from the recommendations that we give when we raise each and every finding. And you know, we work with them in terms of developing the action plan because we need to direct them on exactly what they need to do to fix the situation, to fix the environment, make sure that that finding does not repeat in the future. We're no longer looking at fixing the findings itself, we're looking at fixing the root cause so that in future, every transaction that goes through that process, it goes through a stringent process. And you know, it doesn't happen that some other transaction is slipped. So we are still trying to fix the root cause. And because we do the interim audit, we do the final, in most cases we settle with our final audit in March, April. So by the time the submission day comes, we are there and we need to remind them. And what now happens is that most of our auditees, they schedule audit committees in May before the submission of the financial statement. So again, we do have that level of checking to make sure that before the signature of the financial statements have been kept and have been submitted to the audit committee, and there is no instance of forgetting to submit. In most situations, if there's non-submission, the leadership is a problem. In most cases, you will find that. And in terms of monitoring expenditure, again, through our interim audit, we identify that what we call red flags. So that between January and March, we will issue those interim audits for the areas that we have covered, indicating where areas of concern are so that they can put actions in place to correct these before we come in and do a final audit. With regard to the impact, again, take me back to the original issue that we would audit what is in the third plan. If the third plan of an organization does not measure impact, it makes it a bit difficult. If you take a simple example of the feature, with the introduction of the NSDS 3, the NSDS 3 measures impact now. We are 3
that the NFPS tool did not measure impact. We did make recommendations. However, we were also focusing on, we were guided by what was being expected. But we had engagement with the department in terms of the NFPS tool not focusing on impact, and hence the revision of the NFPS target to NFPS 3 to now measure impact. And again, I believe that through the process that we went through of the development of the planning and development of the system, the portfolio committee can influence these indicators and targets into the right direction. And that is why the portfolio committee is here. If you compare financial performance to the auditor's performance information, there are instances where on the finance side, an entity will get an unqualified opinion. However, when you go to performance information, the entity is performing badly. What we have found is that entities focus on the finance side, but they do not focus on the performance side. We could simply say that if an entity has supporting documentation to support the spending, they should be in a position to support the performance. Let me give an example. Typical thesis. If you take the thesis, they would have paid a service provider to conduct training to certain learners. They can provide supporting evidence for the payment to the service provider. We can audit it, and they are happy with it. When we go to performance, they would have committed to have trained 100 people. However, even though we have the invoice and everything from the service provider, they cannot provide us with they cannot provide us with proof of learners that went through that training. So that becomes a problem. They are keen on the financial side and they are not keen on the performance side. And that's why I'm saying it requires the same level of internal control from the financial into the performance information. I've dealt with accessibility of the management report. I've dealt with targets being submitted to the audit before they are set. And when it comes to the procedures for changing targets, be careful now. I don't believe that organizations can just change targets as and when they please. And the reason why they need to follow the same process is exactly to make it comfortable, to make them apply their minds when they set the targets. The same consultation process, they need to consult with National Treasury and get approval from National Treasury. It needs to come to Parliament. Mm-hmm. It needs to go to the members. All those processes need to be followed. Now, if they bring the changes to the portfolio committee, I believe that the portfolio committee has the prerogative to make a decision for or against those changes based on the reasons that are presented to the portfolio committee. In my life, the AGSA, I've seen it happen once, and it was for the benefit of the entity. It wasn't to change the objective. It was to align, because the objective was not measurable. It was to make it measurable. It wasn't to change it at all. And I don't believe that this can be used for changing them for the sake of changing them. Whether the AGSA can say whether targets are low or not, again, I think the AGSA must be quite careful when it comes to this. And as I said, this should be demonstrated by the level of achievement versus the budget. If they said
if it's just a target too low and the budget is too high, that will be indicated in the what we call either an underspending or a saving. In our terms, there's a difference between an underspending and a saving. A saving is where you have budgeted to spend a certain amount for a certain target for process or action, and you manage to negotiate a lesser price, and you then have a saving. It can be influenced by a number of things. Underspending, you were supposed to have spent, and it will be affected by the achievement again of the target. You were supposed to spend so much, but you did not spend because you were not efficient or effective or one of the stuff. We don't need to differentiate between a saving and an underspend. And again, exactly, that can reflect on the reason for the deviation. As I said, we need the reasons for the deviations must be auditable. And when I say they must be auditable, we require the organization to give us evidence why they did not achieve what they said to achieve. So ideally, when there has been an underachievement of targets and criteria, and if there is no finding in the audit report, it means the entity has submitted, according to the auditor, sufficient evidence to support the underspending. If the entity did not submit appropriate evidence to have a spend, then there should be a funding in the audit. There's a question of how many times we conduct audits. What unqualified opinion means? Madam Chair, under unqualified opinions, we have a second category. We have unqualified opinions with no findings on predetermined objectives and no findings on compliance issues. So we call it unqualified with no findings. And then we have an unqualified with findings on the performance information and or compliance. Now, for predetermined objectives, if we issue an opinion, if we have findings, it will either be a qualified, adverse, or disclaimer of opinion, and other matters. So clearly, the second category, which is unqualified with findings, means that the entity is not clean yet. It means that in terms of the financial situation, yes, they are clean, but when you go to performance and compliance, they are not clean. So, that's what it means. They have processes on the one hand, and they have no processes on the other hand. Slide 9. The percentages that we see there, non-compliance at 56%, it means that 56% of the department, in 56% of the audit report of the department, non-compliance work. It doesn't mean that 56% of the department was clean when it comes to non-compliance. So it means 44% of the department was clean, and so it goes for the rest of the department. So 2% of the entities have non-compliance issues in their audit. There are the issues of the budget and the underspending. In terms of who these entities are, I believe when we share the outcome, we will include the details of who these departments, provincial departments are, who did not give appropriate reasons for underachievement. In terms of the future auditing on the Department of Labor, I believe that was referring to performance audits. as a candidate for this question. I think that's a kind of consistency.
In respect of the development of neither issue, I will give that food to our research and development team to look at that, including it for further performance audit. Maybe there's a quick few that I can respond to. In respect of the positive that will be reported on a performance audit, when we started this infrastructure delivery process, we didn't go into the positive side. You can see the positive side on the readiness audit, as well as now the loss audit, where we're also going to roll forward a good practice guide. In respect of ECD and Karigude audit that we're going to perform, we are going to try and just put it into perspective. So, for instance, you get on ECD that it was a huge budget cut, and the personnel responsible for ECD were not busy with ECD specific tools. To put it into perspective, but what were they being busy with in that meantime? So to try and put that, to level it out between then the negative and the positive, getting to the actual root causes. In respect of the process of performance audit and our long in time, we are definitely capitalizing at the moment since we sorted our first transversal performance audit on infrastructure. That audit did take quite a while. I think it will be from the first initiative on research up until when we go into published reports now. It's going to take between, I don't have the exact date, but if I should say, it will be between 3 and 4 years. On consultants, that was our next audit, we're already reducing it to 2 to 3 years, and ECD will also see that we are going to issue it within 2 to 2.5 years of when we started with the process. You must also remember, although the public report is only coming out at that stage, we are trying to do all our performance audits within a period of, the actual performance audits within a period of 6 to 8 months. So within that 6 to 8 months, management will already receive their management report telling them what is our recommendation that they can start placing action plans in place and addressing the issues identified. Thank you.
I think I'm just we are not going to have any follow-up. But I think what is important to note here, that we are going to do our annual report. And the, what we heard now, well, you know, when it comes to the annual report itself. Because you know now, you know, that it's about treasury regulations, the PFMA, the Public Service Act, and there are other, what personal call, like, you know, framework and systems that we're actually at. Because when you look at your annual report, it's in a format. And then in your annual report, although it talks to the performance management, the performance management letter. You get the management letter when it comes to the regular audit in your annual report. So we can look at the performance itself. And I think what is important that we learn to now is when it comes to your budget and policy speech, it's important there to look at as a set agenda annual report, you know, the targets, etc. that is being put into place. And there too, a person can say, if you look at a target, you feel satisfied or dissatisfied, or what should be put into place. Then when it comes to the changes, when it comes to target changes, you are correct, ma'am, because if there's any changes within the budget, and now it's really, you know, changes that we didn't vote for, the department has to come back. And I think they come back when it comes to the adjustment appropriation. You know, that it comes back to us. The other thing is, I think what is important too, because I was wondering when it comes to your sample, how do you, the choice you make, is it based on performance of previous opinions and emphasis of matters, but we'll come to that. And I think what was important was the transformation. You are there since 1975. Did you transform to cater for the new dispensation? And then the other that always reminds me
There's a thin, not a thin, yes, not a thin line when it comes to our departments and our officials are compliance oriented. Well, there's a lot of laws that that comply to. But we as a committee will look at, you know, how to make them performance oriented. How should we reconcile the two for that synergy? And I think it's a new paradigm shift when it comes to performance itself. And the committee must always note that when it comes to understanding and over expenditure, both are bad. But I think the work mentions a few of points, you know, whether it's poor planning or what is it. And then because that always worries a person, your recommendations are made by the AG. Recommendations are not followed. And do you put processes in place, or should SCOPA's duty to say what sanctions will be followed? You know, there's a lot of question marks too, and I think as a committee, we will have to read through what you're giving to us. And then it needs to be called the audit agenda again back, that you can question a few things. To me, I would like, if things are not there, to send the department back or the audit agenda back, because to me it's about wasteful and fruitless expenditure, and it's going to be the same on their side. And therefore, I always feel we should listen and give our system. And then even when it comes to telephones, I don't like telling people switch off your cell phone during the meeting, because it takes you off from what you are discussing at that moment. I'd like to thank the AG for the report, and I know I will be seeing you again on the 14th of September. And in that day, you know, whether you will be coming back to the committee. I expect the AG to speak now to us. But we are going to.
Thank you, Shelby. We appreciate you this opportunity to impact. I think from our side, it really is help you on our plan. We also hear the content of the audit committee that we can take back and consider during our audit. Study is that we did in planning action. We also identify the hazards that the committee is very much, and we are then able to incorporate them in our audit. Chairperson, I just want to say there are a few questions that have been through it. I think we'll discuss them, and I'm going to point to them in writing if you're comfortable with that. We'll just have a look on that.
Yes, we need to receive them in writing, and certain comments are made at the end to, you know, put that in writing. And then, I think we are comfortable with that. You may leave because you need to go on with the other section of our work.
I think Thank you.